Ready.
We're good?
Yep, good to go.
All right. Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, but honor and recognition in case of success. Now, I've always had that kind of quote in the back of my mind. It's a quote from the British explorer, Ernest Shackleton, who put out an article. Put out an ad in a newspaper in the early 1900s. For me, that quote has always exemplified athletic training in itself. Long hours, little recognition, honor in case of success. With us today is somebody who I've had the absolute pleasure of watching throughout their career, a gentleman in an eternal way, who has answered that ad. To become an athletic trainer. And I welcome to the broadcast today the director of sports medicine for the Sporting Kansas City. I don't know why I keep wanting to say Kansas City Wizards.
No,
Sporting
don't do
Kansas
it.
City, Mr. Kurt Andrews.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. Obviously excited to jump on this call and kind of chat with you guys. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. For anybody who's watching right now, that is Kurt. It is not David Beckham. He's very close looking gentleman, but it is Kurt, and he's the director of their sports medicine out there. Kurt, why don't you just fill us in on who you are, what your bio is, and let's start going at what your career path has looked like.
Sure. So as John alluded to, my name is Kurt Andrews. I am the director of sports medicine here for Sporting KC. This is my first year with the club. I was previously with the LA Galaxy for the last 6 years. To kind of go back in time a little bit, I was born and raised in Metro Detroit. Went to college there at Oakland University. It was a local school for myself that I could commute to, and it's where I met John, and he was kind of my first kind of entrance into the profession. I was a bit confused as to what I wanted to do as I was growing up. I knew I wanted to do something within the medical field. I wanted to be a doctor at one point, wanted to be a PT at one point, and I just had a really good experience. And not to put John on blast, but I really, as a freshie out of nowhere, I had a really good experience working with him. Watching the way he interacted with the guys. I obviously had a huge passion with soccer, so I think I was able to connect instantly with him, his style, and obviously working with the men's soccer team at Oakland University. And it kind of took me down the path that I took. As all athletic trainers, I was in sports growing up at somewhat of a competitive level. And so I've dealt with my fair share of significant injuries. And I had good experience with athletic trainers in the high school setting, and then obviously working alongside John and Tom Ford, who used to be the head athletic trainer at Oakland University. So I really cherished those 4 years that I was there. I got to work with men's soccer and their volleyball team, and it taught me a lot about what was required in this profession. Unfortunately, Oakland University did not have a athletic training curriculum. It was at the time when the entry-level master's program, I believe there was probably 15 in the country at the time, so it was fairly fresh and new. And so, having been at Oakland University and seeing kind of what the smaller scale athletic training room and sports scene was like, I wanted to try a bigger conference, a bigger school, and that's when I went to the University of Arkansas and did my grad school there. And I really enjoyed that experience as well. I think it's a true testament if you can make it through SEC football in season that you can survive in the field of athletic training. It's the way I looked at it is it's going to weed out the weak. And it was an experience that I enjoyed and I feel like I thrived in. I was very fortunate to work with a lot of the athletic trainers in the program, but also within the sports medicine team over at the U of A. And it kind of shaped me to who I am now. In between my first and second year, I did an internship with the Galaxy. At that time, the U of A did not do internships. So I kind of went against the grain a bit and refused to do my summer schools because it was an opportunity that I wanted to do, and I knew it was something that I wanted to do in the future. So I I told my program director, like, look, this is something I'm not going to turn down. So it ended up working out, obviously, for me. And I think it's it tells us a little bit of a story of who I am and my diligence. And so I did my summer internship with the LA Galaxy, went back, finished up my second year of grad school. And then once I left school, I got the opportunity to interview for the assistant position. And that's all she wrote.
Nice. You kind of talked about being at Arkansas and weeding out the week with SEC football. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I think those of us who are in this profession, and not just pro sports, but just the athletic training in general, I think we all understand the commitment it takes, the sacrifices you make, and the selfless attitude that you need to have, because you end up realizing it's not always all about you, because you take care of 20, 30, 100, 300 kids, just depending on your setting. And you have their kids even when they're adults. I've got 28 of my own kids here at Sporting KC, but you really find out who you are as a person when you're put into an environment that requires you to be on your A game at all times. And when I say it weeds out the week, it just shows you who is going to be ready for that environment. And as brash as it may sound, it is what it is. There are those that can thrive in that high-paced, high-stress environment, and there are those that can't. So you find out real quick who you are and what you want to do with your – where you want to end up in your career or your profession.
That's funny. I've had this conversation with probably 1,000 people before. And one of my favorite lines from a movie I watched growing up was about this soldier, and said he's a really good guy as long as somebody keeps throwing hand grenades at him the rest of his life. And I always thought that was a funny line, but then I was like, that's how I feel sometimes, like a lazy, or I don't want to say lazy day, but a day where things are going too smooth or too slow. Like, those days drive me crazy, and I have, you know, idle hands sometimes. It's the days where, like, everything's being thrown at me. Like, I absolutely love and thrive in those days. It's awesome. And I've always thought of that as a trait, or as something that, like, good athletic trainers do. I don't want to say that I'm a good athletic trainer or I'm a great athletic trainer. We talked about humility yesterday, but I think I'm at my best when things are in chaos, and it's only because, like, I'm used to it, or I know the setting, or I know when, that's when I'm going to be my best too. So it's funny that you just mentioned that.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, there's times when you're in front of, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 and you have to run out there and chaos is literally happening in front of you. And there's that time I recall a few years ago when I had a goalie go down and he was completely unconscious, eyes rolled back in his head. And my intern was on the stretcher crew at that time. And after the game, she was like, I was so impressed with how calm you were out there. Like, I don't know how you do it. And it's like, you either do or you don't. It's not something you prepare for. It's just, it's innate. At the end of the day, you just know how to operate in stressful moments.
Right.
It's something that school can't teach you. It's, you hear about it and you learn it, but it's not until that moment where you have to act that you know that you can do it.
Yeah. I think it is sometimes things that you can prepare for. It's just understanding situations, understand settings, preparing for those. For us in the secondary school, it's the communication we have with our EMS, with our team doctors. I have a small staff of interns and an assistant, but, like, there's some amount of times where, like, I do this on the regular. I walk into the room and say, I need the red, we have a red bag. It's our medical, it's our emergency kit. And I say, deconstruct the red bag right now, pull out whatever. And it's like instant, they got to go do it. Or, we'll be having a regular day and pre-game practices or pre-practice taping. And I'll just look at my intern and I'll pull out a stopwatch and I'll start timing them. Like, if you don't think that's pressure, like, add a timing component to anything and you'll see them start shaking for literally no reason whatsoever. They'll start shaking, they'll be nervous. And it's like, hey, listen, you're just taping an ankle right now. It's fine. Imagine what's going to happen on the field at homecoming. Like, for us, homecoming, we get, maybe a couple thousand people. It's nerve-wracking, right? Like, imagine, being in a stadium where it's just absolutely packed. And I could imagine being in Portland, being right on the sidelines right there in an injury setting where somebody's just
hammered by the fans.
screaming at you. How do you handle those situations like that?
To be honest, I actually get a laugh out of it because it's fans can be funny. You know, they say some harsh things to myself, to the players, but sometimes you have to give credit where credit's due, you know, and they're quite brilliant with some of their little cheeky one-liners. So I giggle, you know, and that's all you can do. It's not about them. And you'd be amazed to hear some of the things that they say, but sometimes I just have to smirk because it is funny.
Yeah, not to go off on a tangent about that, we were just kind of talking about, you know, in the summers I work for a PDL team, which is a lower level. It's amateur-based soccer, which we put out guys that end up going to play for guys like Kurt. And we played in the Open Cup against a team right down the road from us. And, the injury happens right on the touchline, right in front of the fans. And I'm like, that's the last thing I want to do right now. And the words that were said to me, like, it was laughable, right? Like, you deal with those situations, you're like, wow, I can't believe that thought went through that guy's head and out of his mouth to me. Like, man, that was, I wanted to go, like, hug him, you know, like, something's up, right? Like, that's brilliant.
Brilliant.
You know, to go off of that a little bit, let's get this back on track.
Sure.
You talked a little bit about like that selfless attitude and working with, you said 28 children there. I'm sure they're going to love hearing that. But what's important when you're dealing with 28 different guys and your staff and a coaching staff? What's a big leadership trait for you that you've picked up or what you think is important?
Sure. I think in the most basic way of saying it, it's being an incredibly strong communicator. One, it's knowing when to talk and then also when to listen. What I've realized now, this is my seventh year in the league, and every year changes just because in pro sports, you know, our roster can be blown up out of nowhere. This year I've got the age range of 15 years old to 33 on my professional or my first team roster. So just the fact that I'm dealing with minors or teenagers all the way up to grown men, it's a culture shock for the young kids because they haven't been around grown men. They haven't heard or seen a lot of the weird things that they do, in the training room, in the locker room. So it's understanding like who's around, when they're around, when to say things, how to say things. There's just a different era between, I mean, working with someone like an Ashley Cole or Stevie Gerrard, people who are from the old English mentality, who kind of like say how it is. They don't really worry about hurting your feelings and just are straightforward. That doesn't work with the younger kids. And so I have to know that when I'm speaking to the kids, you're speaking to the older guys, how to relay information. On my team, I mean, I've got guys from Chile, Argentina, Colombia, Honduras, Spain, Scotland, Portugal, all parts of America. So you have a very eclectic mixture of cultures and how they talk to each other, how they differentiate pain. I mean, that's a huge thing is in Europe and in South America, the way they differentiate like a sharp pain from a dull pain to one of the things I've learned is like in South America, they call ruptures like a grade one or two strain. Like, and it's like, I've ruptured my, and it's like, well, hold on, well, you did what? Like, so it's just the terminology, the language barrier. I would say my Spanglish is very good. So I can get around with understanding and communicating with my Latin Americans and my Spanish guys. But again, it's understanding their culture, understanding where they come from. So when I go back to being a strong communicator, it's important to know who it is that you're working with, knowing your environment, knowing everything that you can. I mean, in our setting as athletic trainers, you spend a lot of time one-on-one on the treatment table with them. You know, if you're doing 30 minutes of passive treatments, you have 30 minutes of time to find out, you know, how their family is, where they were raised, brothers and sisters, mom and dad, you know, interests. You find out a lot about who these guys are and you build a strong relationship with them. And something that you get, which is one of the biggest things that you can get in all of relationships, is trust. The second that these guys trust you, or girls, if that's your setting, you're able to get a lot done. So And then obviously going off of communication, it's how do I speak to Peter? How do I speak to the coaching staff? How do I speak to even the owners if they have questions? We're very fortunate and lucky to have an involved ownership group that are around daily, and they're in and around asking questions. So I think it's important that you just understand who you're talking to and how you relay information. It takes a little bit of experience, and I've had the opportunity to see as an assistant for 6 years how my former bosses communicated with athletes, coaches, management, that kind of stuff. So I think there's something to be said of when you're in a setting, being a sponge, you try to absorb as much information as possible and learn from others around you. You know, not to say that we know everything, because we don't. The moment you realize that you don't know everything, the better off you are. And it's important to surround yourself with those maybe who even know more than you, because it's an opportunity for you to continue learning.
Yeah, I think this kind of path my life has gone down over the last couple of years, and you know, trying to practice more of these traits and just being you know, not only a better leader in my setting, my profession, but you know, it's like for the longest time I read every single day, and I do certain things, and I try to build relationships. And every time I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all right, eventually I'm going to get there. Like, eventually it's going to hit like a tipping point, and I'm going to be good. And like, I'll have all the answers. And you know, it's been more recently, it's like, that's actually not the goal. That's not the path I need to be going down. Like, I need to know, and I need to understand that it's every single day, it's a learning process. Every single day, it's it's a practice. Like you said, it's something that I have to practice every day, but I also have to learn every day too. So if I'm not open to it, if I'm not open to learning or listening, then I'm not going to be a good athletic trainer. I'm not going to be a good leader. And once I stop doing that, like, I'm going to veer off the path, and I'm not going to be as effective when it comes to communication, relationship building, minimal treatments, anything like that. The more I can communicate, the better it is for us. We had an incident last couple of days where I was talking to one of my students, and he came out of nowhere with this injury and wanted to change around like his playing setting. And I'm like, whoa, like you can't be the one choosing that, right? Yeah. Like, you can't just say, raise your hand up and say, I can't, I'm not doing this today because of this. And eventually we had to have that conversation, and I found out more and more. And I just said, hey, listen, man, I may have been short with you, but you have to understand that, like, I didn't have all the information. Like, you need to be able to tell those things. And, you know, we're on both sides of that situation where we can listen too much or we can talk too much. Mm-hmm. And it's finding that balance in there. And the people who find the good balance are the good communicators and build that trust. I think that's one of the most important things that you just said was, not only just building relationships, but building trust. Like, if you're able to build trust, you're able to do more with your athletes, more with your staff, more with, you know, the people who are above and below you. As long as you have that trust, they're going to rely on you, and you can rely on them to do your job and do what you need to do. You talked about the relationships, and are there any experiences that you had that's really drove that home for you, that, hey, this is something I need to work on, or this is something that's really important to me?
I would say my first year when I was an intern in the Galaxy, I think I learned quickly what it was like to deal with, say, like a high profile player. I think you learn really quickly how, like, interactions need to be had with certain people, how to behave, how to speak to. And at the end of the day, you come to find out that these guys, they're another human being. They're another man, just like we are. And to be honest, the training room, it's a sacred temple, if you want to call it. It's an area where these guys can get away from the media, can get away from any sort of pressures, and just be who they are. And it alludes back to them trusting you, trusting the staff that's in that training room. But it's just you learn how to behave in this environment. And I would say I've had a very good experience just in terms of my mentors, you know, including yourself and T. Ford and Armando Rivas, Ivan Piera. Like, I had a lot of very strong mentors in terms of athletic trainers from my experiences in the clinical setting. Obviously, in the educational component of my master's program, I got to learn from a lot of people, the athletic trainers in the Arkansas sports medicine program. You have to, like, you think about athletic training as a toolbox. You pick and choose traits, you pick and choose tools or treatment or modalities, things that you think fit you and fit your environment well. And those are what you bring to the table to ultimately care for all the athletes that you oversee, you know, and not one environment is the same as the other. And I think it's important to understand that, and what I do here and what you do there, they may not work in another setting, and it's all dependent on personnel. And so it goes back to the point. It's important to always be learning from others, you know, and in those moments where you are an intern or you are an assistant, or, you know, even if you're a volunteer, or you're just shadowing, like, be a sponge, absorb as much as you can, ask questions at appropriate times, and learn. And that's the biggest piece of advice I have to all young people that come through here, interns that come through my former program when I was with the Galaxy. It's just use these opportunities and learn as much as you can, because, you know, you are in an incredible position that others would kill to be in. And so it's try to get an understanding of how to behave and how to act in all situations, and learn from everyone else's experiences, but also mistakes. We all make mistakes. And so it's important to learn from those.
That's what they call a segue in the radio business right there.
I've done this before.
Yeah. I always think when you have such great experiences or such, when you have a good side of something, you always have to look at what's the bad side of it. You know, we can always have really good experiences when it comes to communicating, whatever it is, or learning from really good people. Mm-hmm. I think you only really, for me, on one aspect, I think in my life, I've only learned from the bad parts of it, like, or the times where I've failed as a person, or times where I've failed at dealing with an athlete or dealing with an injury. I've only learned from those bad experiences as well. I haven't always learned from that, but, you know, those have been the strongest learning experiences, and you kind of started to go down that path a little bit, that road. What are some bad experiences, that, if you care to share any, that you've learned that have shaped who you are?
Bad experiences. I mean, I don't want to sound like I've never had. I can't in my head, and I knew this question would come up, so I prepared for it. I don't really have a personal bad experience. That sounds bad.
I'm a high school dude.
I don't have a bad experience that has, like, really scarred me or made me change the way I do things or shape me who I am. There's obviously the small little things that you have to deal with on a daily basis, whether it's dealing with a certain player and their wishes or wants and that kind of stuff. And again, it's, you learn how to communicate with these guys or understand where they're coming from. But I don't really have anything that's happened to me in my career where I've had to, like, sit back and learn from it in a negative way. It's always been a learning experience if something's happened, and saying, like, oh, shoot, like, I should have done this time. Like, next time we'll do it that way. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's I always like sitting down. I do post-game briefs with my team, and actually we do them pretty much every single day. There's days where I'm like, hey, let's just get the hell out of here. But I always do post-game briefs with my team and say, you know, if we had, unfortunately, we haven't had the best year when it comes to our football game. And so, you know, we've had to deal with some pretty crazy stuff, not just injury-wise. We've dealt with some weird things this year. But I've always loved those situations because it's at the end of the day, two things. Like, I know I'm going home. And the other thing is, like, I know I'm going to learn, but I'm also going to have a moment to teach my interns and my staff. So we always sit down and say, hey, what do we need to talk about today? What, you know, what did you guys see? What, you know, what is something we can learn from? Do you have questions? And I'm always, always, always imploring them to ask questions. And, you know, maybe find the right time. You know, don't always just stop me right in the middle of something and ask a question. Write it down. Like, I give my interns and I give my staff every year, or every semester, I give them a notebook. Like, I love people who take notes, and I love when they come to me at the end of the day or at the end of the week. It was like, hey, I just had a quick question about this, or that's when I start seeing somebody do that. That's a person who wants to learn more, and they're taking the time to actually flip open a book, write it down, and then ask the question at another time. I think always being open to that learning experience is such an important thing.
Of course.
You talked, I'm going to go back a little bit with the communication aspect. What have you done personally for those athletes that are from other parts of the world? You said your Spanglish is decent. Would you be able to hold a conversation at my family dinner and over Thanksgiving, or how good is your Spanglish?
I'd say it's fairly strong. I'm better at listening to Spanish as opposed to speaking it. But it's one of those things that you're not going to learn Spanish if you don't speak it. So we've got a thing here where I just try to learn. We try to learn a Spanish word every day. Whatever it is, good or bad, it's a word. Typically, when you're learning new languages, it's always the bad ones first. But it's something to you know, continually learn how to communicate with these guys, because it's important to understand where they come from. Mm-hmm. And so, granted, I've taken like 7 years of Spanish in middle school, high school, and college, so I have a really strong foundation. It's just putting the pieces together. My vocab is large. When to use certain ways of verbs and whatnot, that's the tricky part. So I think I always speak in present tense, and the guys probably think I'm a moron, but they understand what I'm saying.
But that also shows that you're trying, like you're trying to communicate with them. You're trying to break that barrier of that communication. I think that's huge too. We have students every year that are from somewhere else. And luckily, my Spanish is decent-ish. I have a student from Spain right now, and the Spain Spanish is much more different than the Spanish I'm used to. And it's fun because I can make fun of him for his lisp and vice versa. And, last 2 years ago, we had a student from Norway, and luckily one of my friends, he played over in Norway for a couple of years, I tried to pick it up a little bit. We also had, Norwegian athletes when we were at Oakland, and, that was another one of those fun moments where I'm trying to pick up Norwegian in an emergency room at Ohio State to try to relay, but like, if you're not willing to learn, you're not willing to lead either. Like that's one of those things you need to be able to constantly, make time.
You have to break down the barrier. And again, it makes them feel comfortable. I think we've got one guy who's a Spanish guy. And from what I hear before I came, he was very quiet. I think he's just a shy person. But the more you speak Spanish to him, from our side, because he speaks Spanish with all our Latin side of the table, he would open up more. And now he uses his English that he actually knows, because in the Barcelona system, they learn how to speak English in their quote unquote high school.
Interesting.
And so him and another player who came from the Barcelona system, they have very good Spanish or very good English. One just uses it more than the other because he feels comfortable with it. And so using my Spanish, and I think kind of not making fun of my own self, but my inabilities to speak it sometimes, it's at least opened up that thread between him and I. And it's been beneficial because he speaks more now and tries to speak his English to us. And it's, I think in those moments too, it's also important that you don't make fun of them or laugh at them. It's just when you correct them, you're correcting them because you want them to speak English the right way. Right. And vice versa, when I speak Spanish the way I do, and if it's wrong, correct me. I'm not going to feel embarrassed about it. I'm actually trying to learn so it can better the both of us. So in a case of emergency, if you're saying words I have no idea what you're saying, it's like, cool. Yeah. This is – I remember one time when I was at L.A., we had a preseason game, and we were playing a team from, Eastern Europe, and he spoke, Ukrainian. The whole team spoke no English, and this kid got absolutely belted in the face off a free kick and was out cold. And so when he woke up, it was like he spoke Russian. No one knew how to speak Russian, and we were all like, what the hell do we do here? We don't know if he has neck pain. We don't know if he has no feeling in his hands. Are you alive? I mean, he ended up being okay, but it was one of those situations where it's like, You got to figure out how to communicate with nonverbal gestures or movements or motions to try to figure out how to solve the situation without, you know, putting this guy into any further harm.
We have a deaf and hard of hearing program here at our high school. So I have deaf students all the time. So imagine, you know, literally not being able to communicate with them. That's one of the things that I've failed at over the last couple of years is I tell myself, hey, I'm going to try to learn some sign language. And I've had some students try to help me out with that. And talk about how difficult it is to learn a new language. Like right now I'm trying to pick up another language and it's easier than learning sign language. And it's definitely something I've failed at, but I mean, that's to not be able to communicate with that person is it's difficult for multiple reasons. Like you said, like when you're dealing with a chaotic situation and you need to communicate with that person, it's scary because you want to help them. Right. And it's pretty difficult when you're not able to do that. That's pretty big. That's huge. We're talking a little bit more, you know, about relationships and I love that because I think that's such a huge trait that leaders need to have. Somebody who wants to be up to, at the top or even be in a position to lead everybody. Like you need to know how to build a relationship. Like that's so important to me. And especially as athletic trainers, like very few, if anybody, is the athletic trainer at the very top. You know, we're always right mid-level where we're dealing. We're, you know, I was explaining it to a doctor the other day. Like, if you look at a wheel, we're the hub of the wheel. We're going to be right in the middle directing high school students, parents, doctors, coaches, physical therapists. I mean, we're right in the middle of it all. And if we can't build a relationship with certain people, then that wheel's not going to work. And it's not going to work for our student athletes. And that's such an important thing that you've been hitting on that. Relationship building is huge for everybody. So more a little bit you personally, what habits do you try to keep every day to help you push forward those traits that you feel that you carry?
I wrote a lot down because when I was thinking about this, there's a lot that goes into leadership. I think to kind of go to, as we segue here with relationships, I think it's important to understand like the how important networking is within this field, and that's with vendors, that's with other colleagues, that's with who we may work with. Not all the time, obviously. Within MLS, we have a tight knit group within PSATs, so. There's always opportunities to network with colleagues within the professional rankings. But it's also, if you want to build lasting relationships with those around you, it's, you know, something I always ask myself, like, how can I inspire someone around me? Or how can I be a role model? At least in my role, there's a lot of young kids that are either coming up through the professional pathway here in Sporting Kansas City and even as a whole within the MLS. We have a lot of academy kids that are signing pro contracts at 15 years old, you know, and these kids sometimes need someone to quote unquote put under their wing. And if you don't have a strong leadership or people who are leaders within the locker room, a lot of times it falls on us and like mentoring these kids or at least being a role in their life where they can grow personally. I think it's important to take on roles like that. I think a habit that I have is I encourage individuality and autonomy of my staff. I myself am not a micromanager. I think it's important that everyone understands like we're here for a reason. One, whether that's winning MLS Cup, winning the Open Cup, being injury free for a year. We all have similar goals, correct? But I'm not here to micromanage. You're here as a staff member because you've worked your butt off just like I have to get here. And I'm not going to stand over your shoulder and make sure you're doing it the way that I want you to do it or the way that I think it should be done. Everyone has, you know, there's not only one road from point A to point B. And I think it's important to understand that. I think as a leader, it's important to have a vision, have some sort of ideas or goals, whether they're minor or major. You know, if it's a weekly goal or yearly goal, I think it's important to have them and to set goals that are accomplishable, because otherwise, if you're setting yourself up for failure, it's going to do you, yourself and your staff an injustice. Another habit that I think I would say I have is I'm accountable. So if something goes wrong, I'll take responsibility for it. You know, as the leader, you are the one that has the final say. Obviously, I think it's important. My staff knows this, that everyone has a seat at the table. Everyone's voice is heard. And by no means is this a dictatorship and it's my way or the highway. So it's important that everyone understands that what they think is going to be valued. And we're going to have an adult discussion whether or not I think you're right or wrong, because I may be wrong, or right. I may not have thought about it the way you did. And so I think it's important that as leaders, we are accountable. You know, and it's not like you stand up when you did it right, and then you kind of blame someone else when it goes wrong. It's you can't cower behind things like that. Some of the biggest, I would say the biggest thing as a habit that I have is I'm a strong self-manager. So when it comes to time management, being organized, having an attention to detail, I think that's incredibly important for not only my setting, just for being a human being, because it's important to have all of that. People really can see when you have an attention to detail, I would say. Like even the way we fold towels, I mean, it comes from those above me. He set a very high standard for the culture he expects, and I appreciate that. I have the same mentality and the same thought process, and so I think I fit well with Peter when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I think it's important that it was important for me when I came in here understanding what was expected. And that goes back to asking questions. You know, if the expectations are set right out front, I know exactly what I need to do from my point of view and from my staff in order to succeed or operate with what he expects from the sports medicine side. And another habit is adaptability. It goes back to weeding out the weak. As well, you have to adapt in this profession, because you may have set schedules or set times for treatments, and then guess what? Shit happens. Chaos. We operate in entropy. It's a chaotic world. We're in the upside down. So,
that's funny. Athletic trainers deal with that everywhere, right? Like, it doesn't matter what setting you're in. It's like you can have the set plan for the day, and you could be walking right into your office with a big old smile, and as soon as you open the door, you're just going to get punched square in the face with literally whatever you didn't plan for that day.
Yeah, and then one of the other habits that I wrote down is striving for excellence. I think I'm someone who continually seeks to learn, whether that's from my staff, from other staff around this league, from books. And honestly, it doesn't even have to be books about athletic training or sports medicine. It's just learning from other people and their experiences. I think it's important that we, and this isn't even we as athletic trainers, but we as individuals understand who we are first, because it's only going to help us either realize our strengths or weaknesses and how we need to grow and where we're, what areas we need to grow in.
Right. What I wanted to avoid this question, but I love asking people this. It's a personal question I ask everybody. And you know, what's a favorite book that you have read, or is there a book that you have gifted to other people? That's a little bit of a Tim Ferriss question, but I think it's such an amazing question to find out the person's answer to that.
A book I've read or a book that I've To be honest, it's a book that I've read recently that I've then people are like loan it out to others. It was Alex Ferguson's book about leading. I think there's something to be said about someone who was incredibly successful within the prem, but at a company organization that's held to the highest standard. I think Man U is a team that is expected to win every year just because of how much money they spend on their payroll and all their players. And just getting insight from someone like that and how they led and how they operated. And I mean, it's a tremendous amount of people that he oversaw, the athletes that he worked with. I mean, it's a It's a scene or a scenery that we may never have an opportunity to step foot in, but it gives you an idea of what he went through and kind of the behind the scenes information that you kind of want. And I think it's important to learn from leaders like him and leaders like others. Obviously, it's relatable because it's the world of soccer. We speak the same language. So I think that's a book that I've recently read that I've actually given out to people. To read.
What's the title of that book? Do you know?
I want to say it's called Leading.
Okay. And do you want to share who Alex Ferguson is? That's outside of you and I.
Alex Ferguson was the manager for Manchester United for about 30 years.
Good. Yeah, I know who he is. I know what that is. there's not always, for us, we get into our little silos of.
Yes, that is true.
Soccer people, and I just wanted to make sure everybody else was able to know who that person was.
Who's Alex Ferguson?
The guy who hosts what? No.
That's fair.
Yeah. No, I thought a lot of these are great. You know, we touched on Jeremy and I yesterday. I talked about the book Extreme Ownership, and it's like you just started reading off the chapter lists of that book. It's the setting the goals, being accountable. One of the things that I've learned I had to do was, like you said, is letting your team and your staff have that autonomy and allowing them to make their own decisions on their own. For me, it's more of an education setting. And I touched on this yesterday a little bit. It was teaching them how to think, not what to think always. Because when they're starting to know or starting to ask what they should be doing, you're not really being a leader, you're being a manager. Mm-hmm. And there's a very big difference between being a manager and a leader. A leader is somebody who I feel that's inspires people and asks something out of the people they work with. Mm-hmm. And a manager is just somebody, like you said, is a micromanager, somebody who, used a word in its own definition. It's somebody who just joysticks and moves people around to different areas. And that may work for a little bit, but everything changes all the time, and it's always going to fall apart for those who are micromanagers.
Yep.
I love the fact that you would hit on goals as well. And, I've shared this in the past that, I legitimately have a goals board in my bedroom. It's a 20x30 whiteboard, and I wake up every morning and I check off the goals that I hit yesterday, and I want to get to a certain point. And it's made me a more confident person, but it's also made me feel a little bit more fulfilled as a person too. Like if I didn't meet the goal of waking up every day at a certain time, like okay, I need to pick it up a little bit. Like I'm not. It's a minuscule thing. It's very minimal. But if I'm not hitting those minimal goals, there's a good chance I'm not going to hit the big goals in my life. Our big goal of saving a life or saving or helping somebody when they need it the most. For me personally, if I'm not meeting those small goals, I'm probably going to fail at that big goal when I need to hit that goal at the right time. So I always thought that's a huge trait, and I'm glad that you touched on that a little bit. What is your definition, your personal definition of a leader?
Oof, that's a tough one because when I wrote it down, it ended up being quite lengthy.
How many pages?
It's a full page, but it's small print. Being a leader, it's so multifactorial. You have to fill a lot of buckets. And we've kind of touched on a lot of the qualities, I think, in this discussion of what it takes to be a leader. I can read you this if you'd like. But it's not that long, actually.
You're going to have to read it like one of those drug commercials at the end. You got that second.
So leadership is a multifaceted and strongly influenced by the environment an individual is in. Leading means having a vision and sharing it with others. A leader motivates the professional potential of colleagues in order to achieve objectives of the organization. A leader is selfless and is at the service of the team. A leader shows empathy and is compassionate. Leadership is the ability to create an environment that encourages both personal and professional growth. A leader is thorough, someone who sets the bar high for the people around them and sets realistic goals the department can achieve. The leader needs to be at the forefront of their field and continually challenge themselves and others around them. A leader encourages teamwork and collaboration between departments, but understands the importance of relationships. A leader takes calculated risks and remains confident in making tough decisions. And on the reverse side, if a mistake is made, the leader has to take the blame. True leaders continue to seek improvement, both personally and professionally, and continually encourage others to be the best version of themselves.
That's pretty quick. Good. Yeah. That line of creating an environment for growth, that's huge. That's really impactful. I think, you talked about not being a micromanager and not being that person who, is overseeing and making sure everybody does the right thing all the time. I was in Dallas 2 or 3 weeks ago for a leadership conference. And one of the things that caught me by surprise was a good leader should be trying to work themselves out of a job. You want to create that growth or that environment, like you had just touched on, for the person who's beneath you to take over, right? And it may sound a little counterproductive, but, if you think about the people who have been in your life, the people you've worked under, they have prepared you for your position right now, right? And, they may not have necessarily lost their job or anything, but they have worked with you enough so that you're able to take over and be in that situation and be in that setting to be a leader and to now take over your own program and work with, how many different people and make an impact too. Mm-hmm. You kind of touched on a little bit ago. Another thing that I have written down at home is be the author of somebody's story today, right? You want to help them create their own story, but you want to help them, you want to guide them a little bit through creation of that story. So, I think you had mentioned that and have exemplified that through your career so far is really just helping people as a leader.
I think it's important too, and that even extends into the athletes we serve. We don't want to become a crutch for them. We want them to become autonomous, because there are times, i.e. when they go to national camp or when they're away from us in the off season, we want them to understand their body. So it's educating them enough to where they can have a anatomical conversation. A lot of these American kids come from a college program where some of them have done some sort of kines, and it's actually fun to interact with them, because they'll go back to their 4-year studies and bring up things like, oh, I remember learning that in anatomy, or oh, I remember that in kinesiology 101. And so it's how can we empower them to know their body, understand their body. And it's just, it's interesting, because then you'll see the vets and the older guys in the gym in the morning, taking care of their problem areas, things that we've prescribed as prehab things based on, previous injuries and or certain issues they may have within the musculoskeletal system. And so it's important that we're educating them as well. And again, that's not just the staff and the athletic trainers that are around us, but it's also the athletes we serve, because at the end of the day, we want to be role models, and soccer's not always going to be in their future. It's a chapter in their life. And we also want to prepare these guys to being productive citizens and good men at the end of the day, and women for those in the female sports, but we want them to be good people. And so I think that's another thing that I like to educate guys on, and it goes beyond, subtle sexism and inequality understanding how people are different, and that's a good thing. Honestly, life would be boring if we were all the same. Mm-hmm. And so it's when can you have teaching moments with people? So I think that's a really cool part of our job as well.
Yeah, I think that's, we're in a spot where we're so impactful, and you have to understand that. I love that part of our job, and part of my job is, especially me in the secondary setting, I have these moldable boys and girls who I know are going to become men and women. And I love the fact that I can be a part of their life and help them make right decisions. And that there's times where it's everywhere from my boyfriend broke up with me to my mom or dad, one of them had passed. And you're sitting with them, and they're the person who they have come to. And that's, they're tough situations, they're funny situations. But if you recognize them, you know you're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And I love being a part of that.
Yeah.
We'll kind of come to the end right now. This is the hard one for you. What one word describes you as a leader?
One word. So when I
one English word.
I wrote down seven.
Seven.
I wrote down seven because I think there's pillars to what creates a good leader. But I would say if I had to choose one, it would be passionate. Someone who is passionate about what they do sets an example for those around them. Obviously, to me, athletic training is not a job. It's something that I truly enjoy doing for many of the reasons why we've talked about it, you know, in this show and kind of what you alluded to. The relationships you make, they're not just momentary, they're life lasting. So I still continually get phone calls and text messages from players, you know, 6 years ago. And it's, you share moments that are kind of inexplainable, because of those times where, you know, a parent's had cancer or a parent's passed or, you know, a dog's died. Like you share the sad moments with these guys and it goes back to them trusting you. Yeah. We are a strong part of their life. I mean, honestly, and I can say this because I'm married. You're married to two people. You're married to being an athletic trainer, and you're married to your wife. It's split evenly because you love what you do, and obviously you love who you're with. And it's important that when you come into this arena or this profession, that you are compassionate and empathetic towards everyone that you touch, because you get to touch a lot of people's lives, athletes, coworkers, colleagues, that kind of stuff. So it's a great experience to have on the daily.
That's a great, really good place for us to stop, get close to the end right there. I'm really happy that we're able to do these, this series, because it's been something that, you know, like Jeremy and I have talked about, and we've put a lot of work into it, and it hasn't been work that sucks. It's been like refreshing and like energizing. And, you know, one of the things that you just said is having that passion, but set the example for those around you. Like that, just like, I want to go get after it right now. Like I'm ready to go. I've got a JVB soccer game in a little bit, and I'm just so pumped for it right now because of that. I thought that was an awesome thing that you had said, and I love that definition, that your one word definition that stretched out, but I won't hold you to that. One of the things that I wanted to do for every one of these episodes is have a closing gratitude. I think that's an important thing as well. You know, for me, I'll start it out today. Obviously, Kurt, I want to thank you for being here and sharing your story and sharing your passion for the career and for the profession and sharing. I want to thank I want to thank my staff today to allow me to step out and do this and to be a continuing something for me to continue to be a better person and to be a better leader. Without my staff, without those people, I wouldn't be necessarily a leader, but I wouldn't have the practice to be a better person every day. So who would you like to thank and who would you like to close out with some gratitude?
Sure. Yeah. Obviously, thank you for having me on. This is an incredible pleasure. I always enjoy, you know, talking to others within this profession and again, learning from others and getting the opportunity to hopefully teach someone something today. Like you said, I have to thank yourself, T. Ford, all the people that I've been under within when I was a kid, didn't know what I wanted to do through my program at Arkansas and then obviously through the Galaxy. And it extends beyond that. You know, it's the way I was raised, the people that I've surrounded myself with. You know, it's, we are who we are because of who we surround ourselves with. And it's a thank you to everyone that is at least been a part of my life, because it's made me who I am now. And obviously for the opportunity to be in this profession. It's an incredible, it's a humbling experience every day when you get to go home and you're satisfied with what you've done that day, but with what you do every day. And it's also, you know, back to what I said earlier, it's not a job for me. It's a passion that I have for what I do. And so when I thank people, I thank everyone, because I continually learn from who I'm with and who's around.
Great. That's awesome. Jeremy, you have any questions for Kurt?
I do want to mention real quick, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership. Andrews. So each of these in the series, except for the very first and the very last, will be leadership and then the last name of the person, the guest that we're having. So again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership Andrews. And I've been typing in notes as much as I can. Kurt, I would like to get, if you typed them up, a copy of the notes. If not, then take a picture and send it. And then I'll type in some of those notes, because I know you said 7 words. I know you said a full page script definition. If it's okay, I would like to add those into the show notes and have those there for everybody that's listening in and checking it out later. Again, at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadership Andrews. And then I know I wanted to ask you, if someone wants to get a hold of you, maybe they want to do an internship, maybe they just want to find out a little bit more about how you got there or your journey, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you, Kurt?
I do have a Twitter. I don't use it ever, just because, well, I use it for research and staying fresh with the news, but I don't tweet. But I will communicate through that venue. It's at @KurtAndrews_ATC. But honestly, the best way to get a hold of me is through email. I'm pretty diligent with checking my email and responding back to people. So my email is @KAndrews, that's KANDREWS, @sportingkc.com.
If you want to check out Kurt, if you want to get in touch with him, again, he was pretty quick. We had a test call like almost as soon as John said, hey, this is who I want to talk to, we jumped on the test call. So I can vouch for that he's good about getting back to you there. Like, it was really cool for me to sit and listen to this one, because John was talking about how I should be training somebody to replace me. And I talked last time about how my kids pretty much did the job by themselves, except for what they, can't do because they're students. But also, as I sit here and listen to John interview Kurt, I am the host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast, but I didn't say anything until it was all over. And so it's really cool for me to sit back and allow John to be autonomous with this interview. And so John, again, it's awesome. And I'm so excited about what you have for the rest of this month. And then as we sit here and I listen to so many of these things, I've actually put in the show notes where you're talking about understanding the commander's intent, because Kurt, you were talking about making sure that everybody knows what they're doing, or decentralized command, which is again from extreme ownership, because you're talking about people being autonomous. Communicating, and then there was a couple other in there that I typed in there, but as I just hear this book and then I hear you guys talking about this, it's so cool how it all fits together. And then after our conversation yesterday, John, I actually was out there at practice and I was thinking, okay, I'm telling them to roll up the chiller or roll up the hydration unit hose this way, but am I explaining it so that they know why, right? Because I have to continue to mentor and train them on what I want them to do rather than just do it because I said do it this way, right? And so it's really cool for me to have these conversations and be able to take just that little piece, because there's so much in these conversations. Like I said yesterday, you just got to take one piece and go with that one piece and apply that and then come back and listen to it again and again and again. And so it's really been fun for me to walk this process with you. So that was kind of my deal. But my gratitude, since that's where we were, was actually for Clint and Brandon over at Dragonfly Max. They're partnering with the Sports Medicine Broadcast, but they've also hosted the podcast lounge at NATA, which has given me an opportunity to meet a lot of people. But it's not just about like them getting their name out. We continue to have conversations. Hey, Jeremy, how can we help this grow? How can we, instead of just, 1,000 listeners or whatever it is, how can we get all 45,000 athletic trainers listening and joining in on this conversation? What can we do to help work together to grow, as the NATA grows? But how can we grow the profession of athletic training? And every time I talk to them, that's what it's about. It's not about them or their name. It really is about that, because that's what they say every time. And so I'm really thankful for them encouraging me to do things that make it grow rather than just like sell out. And so Clint and Brandon, thank you very much for your support and encouragement as we continue to grow together. And I think that's all I have. So Kurt, John, if y'all have anything else.
No, Kurt, go ahead.
Well, there was in the questions that John sent me, and I think this is a good way to leave it. One of the questions he said is, do you have a definition of success? And I had like three pages. I went and did research on just different people, how they define success. And I think one of the biggest things that I found, or I think the one that resonated with me most, was success is how well you do what you do when nobody else is looking. I think that exemplifies a lot of who I am and who we are as athletic trainers. We are backroom staff, and it's typically better when no one knows our name, because mm-hmm. that way we're doing the right thing. The moment your name is coming up is typically not a good thing. So it was something that I was hoping that he asked that question, but I figured I'd just ask it for him.
That's great. No, I'm glad that you brought that up. I've left that in there. I think a person who's a good leader is a successful person. And that's the reason I had that question on there. Thank you for bringing it back up. So
not a problem. You'll see in my notes how I wrote like 40 different quotes for success. And then just that one stuck to me. So that's all I have.
Awesome. Well, Kurt, I'm going to let you go. And I really appreciate you being our first guest. You've definitely raised the bar from
expectations high.
The expectations are high for the rest of the month, and I really appreciate that. We got off to a roaring start this last 2 days, and I look forward to the rest of the month. And I really appreciate you being on and taking the time to be with us today.
Perfect. Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure, and it was obviously something I enjoy doing.
Awesome.
All right. So for Jeremy, Kurt Andrews at Sporting KC, John Seiko hosting the Leadership and Athletic Training Series in the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We'll be podcasting live all October doing leadership stuff, but then they'll be obviously released on the show. So just check them out. Check out the show notes. Get in touch with one of these guys, because they're much better leaders than I am. That's why I'm sitting here quiet, right? So for Jeremy, Kurt, and John, that is a wrap.